going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Thank you so much, Capital. Welcome to another edition of the Going Deep podcast. A bit of a different episode, although we certainly will go deep in a different direction. And I love to talk to interesting journalists with interesting takes. We're bringing on interesting things. And we're talking to a journalist today who had a take that many didn't find just interesting. They found it somewhat offensive and felt it missed the mark, so much so that for our X or Twitter friends, the original post got ratioed quite a bit. Now, I'm no stranger from saying things on social media that a large amount of the population seem to not agree with or like. I just literally was fighting with Bobby Ryan for some godforsaken reason show about his take on women's basketball and his disdain for it. You must be thinking, why did I do that? And it's a great question. Not sure. But I get on social and I get competitive. And next thing you know, I'm doom scrolling as people are fighting in the comments and my wife is shaking her head at me. So I get it. But I do think there is room for longer discourse, longer conversation to either find some common ground or to better understand someone's side, even if you don't agree with it. And that would be the case for me, as I don't agree with the side that Andrew Berkshire took about Zach Hyman scoring 50 goals. I'm sure if you are a hockey fan in this country, you saw it, probably weighed in on it yourself. Many media members have. And I could describe the take, but why don't you take a listen to a sampling of what Andrew, who has his own hockey credentials as a journalist and host of Game Over Montreal and the Crosscheck NHL show, has been a writer about the game of hockey in our country for a long time. His reflexive response to Hyman scoring 50 goals in the way that it was covered by the media was this.
This might make some people upset, but miss me with the Zach Hyman story right now. Listen, I've been in the media industry since around 2012, maybe a little bit longer than that, but professionally since 2012. And frankly, it's not just about hockey. It's not just about sports. Our media industry has to do a better job of telling truthful stories, all right? And listen, Zach Hyman scored 50 goals at age 31. Fantastic accomplishment. Incredible. But the story that's being sold right now and repeated ad nauseum all over media is that, you know, if you work hard, if you stick to it, you can get there too. 31-year-old guy finally hit the 50-goal mark. Hard worker, all that. Yeah, great. Except you're missing the part of the story where Zach Hyman grew up insanely rich, where his parents bought an entire league to guarantee him playing time, where he did exclusive training that only a rich person could perform, that only a rich person could afford with, you know, professional athletes his whole life. His whole life. This is a person who has had every single possible advantage to get where they are today.
Now, as you can imagine, many people, not all, but many, disagreed with that perspective. I felt like it was incomplete and missing some context. He further clarified and addressed the concerns that people had in a second post. I'm not going to play you the entire thing. The first one was over 3 minutes. We played you a sample. The second one is over 8 minutes. Just for context, we'll play you a sample because we'll have our own conversation with Andrew coming up. But here's how Andrew addressed the criticism of his media criticism.
I come at everything as an analyst. That's what I do. That's how I write about hockey. I like to reach in, pull things apart, figure out why things are the way they are. But the video that I was doing talking about Zach Hyman wasn't about analysis. It was about media criticism. And I let a very real reservation that I have about Zach Hyman's career in how I analyze him and place him in like my personal rankings of where players fit be part of that video when it had no place there. So when I talked about Zach Hyman going from Austin Matthews to Connor McDavid and being put in these situations that are extraordinarily lucky, this is something that I do think about when I think about what is Zach Hyman compared to the rest of his peers in the NHL. How does he stack up? Do the goal totals make sense? But in that video, it's irrelevant, right? We're not talking about Zach Hyman in terms of what he is as a player. What I'm talking about is when we build these kinds of mythologies about players, what kinds of stories are we telling?
And that's essentially where we are now, where many people want to tar and feather him in Town Square. I don't really know if that is productive. I think it is more reductive. I'd actually more like to have the conversation. Not that I have the moral authority to cross-examine anyone on their take on any sport, never mind hockey, but I guess I was left with more questions than answers. And as I told Andrew, I fundamentally disagreed with the thesis statement and some of the premises. And so obviously I was going to disagree with the conclusion, but maybe we can get Andrew to show his work a little bit. And whether it's me, you, the listening audience, you can have a broader context on where he was coming from, but probably more importantly, less about Hyman or the media criticism, we can unpack the actual root cause of the issue, and that hockey is an incredibly expensive sport to play. And thus, not everybody has the luxury to be able to chase their dreams playing it. We go deep with Andrew Berkshire on the Zach Hyman 50-goal controversy. So, Andrew, thanks for joining. As I told you, I didn't necessarily align with and agree with your take on what I'm hoping to further today. But maybe we just start with, take me into the mindset of when you saw him score 50, the response on social and in the media, what called you to post and take the conversation in the direction that you did?
Yeah, I think there are a few factors, right? I think the first factor is I happen to know Hyman's story, right? Working in sports media in Canada, everything Toronto gets well covered compared to, you know, players in the States. So I knew Hyman's and the general idea of his story. And 50 is amazing. Nobody can ever take that away from him. It's absolutely incredible. He's a fantastic hockey player. I think that I already know the mistake that I made in the video. And as I said in a follow-up, and I have no problem admitting when I make mistakes, it's part of life. But the main thing for me was just the coverage and the tone that it took compared to simply where hockey is and where we are as a country as well. I think that there's a lot of people who don't want to talk about the staggering, not just income inequality, but the exclusionary way that our country has gone in the last 30, 40 years. And that is like, hockey is ahead of the game on that in terms of how bad it's gotten. And Hyman's not unique in terms of the affluence that he grew up with. Maybe it's a little bit more than some other players, but whether it's connections to hockey people or wealth that brings you to that point, it's become very rare for players to make the NHL if they don't come from a certain income bracket or a certain amount of influential connections that their family has. And I think when we're writing a big profile about a player who just had like a career-heavy accomplishment and we're trying to tell their story. I think when we omit that kind of stuff, at the end of the day, it comes across to me as I'm trying not to be disrespectful, but it's hard not to, because what I'm talking about is like something that I really don't respect. It becomes like pablum, where we're saying like, look at this person who only made it because of, you know, he worked harder than everyone else. And no one is denying that Zach Hyman and every other NHL player, frankly, work really hard to get where they get. That's implicit in making the NHL. But if we never talk about, in these big moments, if we never talk about what led to this situation and how they were able to get there on top of the hard work, on top of the talent, then I think we're doing a disservice to people in general. And I think that's where I was. And obviously, my tone was not appreciated by a lot of people. But overall, I think time has gone by on this issue, at least. What I'm seeing more of is people reaching out to me from minor hockey across Canada, people who work in minor hockey, people who have done the major junior thing themselves and either not made it or not even gotten to major junior, whose family invested a huge amount of money. And they're saying, like, this is something that we actually need to talk about. And whether it was done gracefully or not, the conversations are starting to be had. Like, there's a lot of people in this country who have tried to make it and have spent incredible amounts of money, who've mortgaged their family's future and now sit on the sidelines kind of lost. And it is a hockey issue, but above all, it's an issue for Canada. And I think that's where I am at with it.
Yes, there's a lot there. So let's maybe start where you ended. To me, what you just described is capitalism. Like, I don't think that is unique to hockey or sport or Zach Hyman. We could have the same conversation if you want to be a trial lawyer or a dentist or a politician, right? Like, I think that is just the system that we're living in to an extent. So that's why, to me, it seemed like, although an issue, it to me seemed an issue that is not new or unique. It seems to me to be somewhat self-evident.
I think it is self-evident to an extent, but something can be self-evident, but if we never talk about it and never address it, then it's never going to change. And it is definitely a feature of capitalism, but I think we have to look at the last 30, 40 years of capitalism, especially in North America, and how things have changed. And we have to recognize that income inequality is increasing. It's, I believe, now worse in Canada than even like the 1930s. The ability, like, upward mobility for the average person is rapidly disappearing. You know, everywhere we turn, especially in our industry, it's layoffs, you know, it's not hires. There's very little of that going on. There's very little people who are making it forward. And, you know, hockey is a fixed end point, right? There's only 32 teams and, you know, maybe it'll be a couple more eventually, but there's very few jobs available. And I think it's great to celebrate the players who did make it, but I think we could do a better job of recognizing the fact that right now, in terms of Canada's developmental programs for hockey, there's so much vampiric capitalism in those systems that it's just flat out non-accessible for anyone outside of like the top 10 to 15% of wealthy people in this country, wealthy families in this country. And if we continue to go that route and it continues to escalate as it is, and we never talk about it, then we're going to get to a point where talent level is going to fall off. You know, for when you're only drawing from a small percentage of the population, you're not going to be getting all the best players. You're going to be getting the best players from that cohort that could afford to continue to be players. And I think this is a really real issue that we need to continue to keep on the forefront. And frankly, the response to it and the complete unwillingness from a lot of major players in hockey media is a little bit shocking. I know that there was some hurt feelings as well, but as I said off the hop, I'm more than willing to talk about and engage with reasons why I'm wrong. I haven't seen many people, especially from the power players in this industry, willing to do anything more than take shots around this conversation. So I think that there's a hesitance to talk about real things, and I think that's a problem.
Well, that's why I wanted to have the conversation with you, because I believe that we should be able to disagree agreeably. And I think at times we're in this conversation that has started, and it's great you've started a conversation, even though, you know, you had to be ratioed for it to happen. I think that an often this happens on social media is that people are arguing about two different things at the same time. And
yes,
you're talking about a grand and greater issue and finding fault at people who are covering him and his achievement and the work ethic that that achievement took. But I think you're looking at this at different starting points. Yes, Zach Hyman's parents, which is a story that I know, I think it's well known, you know, gave him a great advantage when he was 11, but he's now 31. And what people are celebrating is the fact that when he entered the NHL, he is not someone who anyone, no matter the financial background he was coming from, expected to score 50 goals. And he worked his way to a spot where, at age 31, he has scored 50 goals, which, you know, you could tell me better than I could speak to it. It's not often that the first time you score 50 goals is when you're at an age where people are looking at you potentially exiting the league, not entering it. So I think they're not comparing Zach Hyman to all other young kids who may have had a dream to be in the NHL. They're not comparing him even to, you know, all kids who could have played hockey who didn't have the means. They're comparing Zach Hyman to when he started as an NHLer and the amount of diligence and work ethic it took for him to get to this place. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you. I think the difference that I'm seeing is, like, if I'm gonna, when somebody hits an accomplishment like this, right? Like the big thing that we like to do in media is do the big profile piece, you know. Connor McDavid wins his first Hart Trophy, and then we tell, like, the Connor McDavid story. Carey Price won the Hart Trophy. There was a lot of, like, big Carey Price profiles out there. And I think if you were going to tell the story of a guy like Carey Price, for example, and you don't talk about how his dad had to get a plane and a pilot's license to fly him from Anaheim Lake to Williams Lake for practice and games in order to facilitate, you know, the talent level and the work ethic to get to the NHL, I think that you're telling half a story at best. And it doesn't have to be framed as a, like, listen, his dad had a lot of privilege and that's how he was able to afford a plane. And there's lots of Carey Prices around the league that, or around the country, that never got a chance to be Carey Price because they didn't have this situation. You could frame it completely differently. You could say, like, Carey Price's parents refused to let his talent fall through the cracks. They pushed hard in every avenue that they possibly could to get him there. You could say the exact same thing about Zach Hyman. You can tell that story in a way that is still a positive. It's not taking anything away from Zach Hyman. But when you omit that part and you're only talking about from the NHL, like from making the NHL to the 50 goals, I think it's just poorly done. And it creates this kind of, like, easy story that we like to do a lot, and it's not just hockey media, like the easy story of, you know, this guy works harder than everyone else, look at this great accomplishment, but it's just not that simple. And I think Zach Hyman is very clearly a hard worker. His playing style is very hard nosed. You've got to be willing to take physical punishment to score from the areas that he scores from. But I also think we have an issue with the way that we cover sports in general, in that we recognize a play style that lends itself to the idea of hard work, but is a player who plays like Zach Hyman or a Brendan Gallagher, are they the hardest worker in the NHL because they play a hardworking style? Or, you know, is Sidney Crosby the hardest worker in the NHL because he works at his skills development constantly? And it doesn't need to be a competition, but I think that we equate a certain style of play with like hard work and grittiness and kind of ignore some of the more skilled players. And like, they also had to work hard to get to that point, right? Like, we can't ignore that part. So I think it just falls really tidily into a story that we like to tell in Canada and the U.S. I don't know about Europe. I don't read enough European news, but that idea of like the blue collar style of pick up your lunch pail and get to work, outwork everyone, and success will find you. And I just think we're at a point in history now where even in our sports coverage, which, you know, is entertainment, it's fun, we need to be aware that that story is a little bit toxic because it sets up false expectations for every kid who reads it, for every team who reads it, every person who reads it. I think that there's a big push that keeps extremely rich people happy that, you know, everybody has to work super hard, go above and beyond, right? That's the idea of, in order to be successful, you have to work extremely hard, go above and beyond. But if the salaries don't reflect that, then what you're really doing is encouraging people to go above and beyond for someone else, right? It's not actually just, it's not for you, not really, because the upward mobility is gone. And I think if we're going to remove that part of the equation when we're telling these big profile type stories, I think it does a disservice.
But I totally get how you could take the Carey Price example and frame it differently, you know, as you wish. But to be fair, you framed the Zach Hyman scenario in a very specific way, saying essentially his parents bought a league so to make sure that he would have the best advantages. You didn't say, you know, they were philanthropic to make sure that the entire league had all the resources needed so that it was a high level of hockey. Like, you chose violence to prove the point that there was a massive barrier of entry in being able to do that, and he was a benefit from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And they may have done things to help the league along as well. That's good. But at the end of the day, the purpose wasn't to help the league, right? It was to help their kid, which, there's nothing wrong with trying to help your kid get a leg up. And I'm sure that in the Hyman household, there was a discussion at some point where Zach's dad said, like, listen, we'll make sure you get every opportunity, but you've got to do everything possible to make it worth it. You can't take days off, all that. And that's what I assume, just based on his work ethic and the way he carries himself. I don't know if that's actually part of the story, but it would make sense to me. I think you can tell that story relatively easily without having it to be represented as a negative thing. I think you can say Zach's dad and his mom wanted him to have every opportunity to fulfill his dream, right? And they had the financial means to make that happen, just that not everyone does.
So I guess my question is, you know, where do we draw the line on how long you need to fill in that aspect of the story? Should we discredit Steph Curry because his dad was an NBA player and one of the greatest shooters of all time? Do we continue to bring up the fact that Vladdy Guerrero Jr., you know, hung around, you know, clubhouses for, you know, his entire life? The Tkachuk brothers are seen as hardworking, gritty, intense players, which is true, and they've had great accomplishment, but they also had access to great wealth and a father in the NHL. You've obviously, in your example, mentioned the juxtaposition between someone like Reinhardt and their access to, you know, the league, which is a different side of and type of privilege. But I there's also a value to that. I have no idea what socioeconomic background Caitlin Clark is from. That hasn't been part of building up her narrative as a hero. I mean, she makes a lot of money from NIL, so automatically, no matter what her parents make, she, at this point in her life, is not necessarily underclass in terms of financial ability. Where do we draw the line in terms of the level of necessity and appropriateness to bring up how someone was given a benefit in starting their chase in becoming great?
I mean, I think, well, first of all, I want to disagree with just one thing that you said there. You're saying like denigrate like Steph Curry, right? I don't think that if we talk about the realities of their upbringing, that we're like taking away their accomplishments. They still did it, right? They're still playing in on the same court or the same ice rink as everyone else in the top league. So nothing is being taken away. But I don't think.
When you put that in the conversation. You put that asterisk there, that qualifier. We use Steph an example. You know, a very similar comp would be, well, yes, Steph Curry hit 400 three-pointers in a season. Dame Lillard hit 300. But remember, Dame Lillard came from poverty. Steph Curry grew up in a mansion in Toronto in Carolina. He had a benefit that Damian Lillard didn't have, right? Like, that's essentially the basketball version of the type of context you want to add to Hyman's achievement. We can't just say he worked hard for what he did. Let's acknowledge he had a great benefit and he started essentially on third base.
Yeah, and I don't think acknowledging those things is trying to denigrate a player's accomplishments. I think it's just proper context. Like, I don't think that we should be letting people whose job is to tell stories and to report on what actually happened, get away with half stories. You know, if you're, and this isn't to say like every time Zach Hyman scores, the person writing the game recap has to be like, and Zach who came from wealthy parents. No, it's when you're writing a big profile piece about somebody and telling like their story of how they got here. That's where the issue comes to me is, can we be honest about where the benefits have been to get them to this area? And we can do it in a way that's not negative. Like, I think part of my frustration in the reaction to this is the automatic assumption that by telling the truth, that we're denigrating somebody's accomplishments. And at the same time, I think we like to tell the story in hockey of, you know, like the Stewart brothers who came from poverty and made it all the way to the NHL. We like to talk about the hockey parent who sacrificed everything, you know, time on weekends, the 5 a.m. practices, the travel time to go through these tournaments. And we look at them as heroes, but we're not necessarily telling the other side of it, which is there's a lot of people like that who their children never benefit from it because at some point they were locked out, not due to talent or work ethic, just it became too expensive. And if we're not going to be willing to talk about that stuff, we're never going to get to the point where we're going to change it. You know, like I've heard Jeff Merrick talk for, man, like 2 decades about the idea of limiting what kind of sticks you can use outside of professional leagues to make things more accessible. But that goes a certain way, I'm sure, for a lot of parents. That would make things easy. But it's so much worse than that. Right now, you talk to people in minor hockey around Canada, and I've got so many people who reached out. You talk to people here in Montreal, and it's a hustle just to get enough kids signed up to play like a league because people just cannot afford it anymore. And with everything pinching tighter and inflation going crazy and food prices going crazy, housing prices going crazy, hockey is dropping by the wayside. And you know, is this a political issue? Yes, but it's also an issue for our sport and the long-term health of it if we don't wrestle with it.
Okay, Andrew, there's a lot there. Let's take a break. This would be a good time to take a pause. After the break, more of the conversation with Andrew Berkshire.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson is a show.
And I'm so happy that you're listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much, Grandma and Granddad. My granddad, a big Leafs fan, his only interest in Zach Hyman scoring 50 goals was he was upset it didn't happen in a Maple Leafs uniform. But let's continue the thread of conversation that we were just on. I want to make sure, though, that I'm on task in terms of the conversation, because in your clarification, you tried to steer the conversation less about Zach Hyman and his achievements and his background, and more about a critique of media and what we need to do as journalists and the stories that we should be telling. And the financial inequities, the serious threat on the sport are not new, not unique, don't change whether Hyman scores 5 goals, 50, or 500. So for you, in terms of storytelling, what are you not seeing? What are you desiring that is going to help that issue more than, you know, the street hockey programs that the NHL is putting together, the subsidized gear programs that, you know, programs like Jumpstart are putting together? What, it sounds like you're looking for the Fifth Estate to do their part. What in that aspect are you not seeing that you'd like to see?
I just like to see, I mean, exactly what we've been talking about so far, really, in that you mentioned, you know, adding the comments that I had in my video took away from Zach's accomplishment. Well, I would argue that omitting them in the first place, that several people did, that is the issue more than adding the context. I think when you're telling a story and you're deciding, well, this part I'm not going to talk about because such and such, and you're like making up reasons in your head, that is where I have an issue with hockey media in general and media in general, really. I mean, how many articles do we need to talk about? Some like, oh, these millennials bought them their house on their own, and how did they do it? Oh, their parents gave them $200,000. You know, it's this kind of storytelling that is so rampant in our culture. We need to just get away from it. We need to be honest in how things happen, how people get to certain places in our society. Because frankly, I think Canadians are very passive people politically. We kind of just go back and forth between liberal and conservative and hope that fixes the issue, except for Quebec, which kind of plays federalism a little bit more like a fiddle. But I just would like Canadians to wake up and realize what's happening, that it's not just hockey, that things are changing and they're changing very quickly. And the flow of wealth is going very rapidly only upwards. And I don't know if a couple of like street hockey programs or gear incentives are going to change that when you have, you know, hockey camps in the summer that cost $40,000 to enter, you know, for kids, for like 10-year-olds. And it's just the way that we've structured everything for development going into this sport is all about squeezing money out. And like, yes, the skills development is there, and the league is probably more skilled than it has ever been. But the more we narrow down that pool, the less it's going to get. And the fact is, the same thing's happening just for general viewership, you know, not in terms of TV, but to go to the arena now to watch a game, that's also like a lot of people are locked out of that. You know, to watch a game in Winnipeg for a family of four, you're looking at before food, what, like $700 for one night? Like, that's a big ask. And you see, you know, the NHL talking about their revenue growing, and I'm sure some of it is growth, but how much of that revenue growth is driven by ticket prices going way up and the NHL continuing to be a gate-driven league? So you're finding more ways to squeeze the people who are already in, but are you actually growing as a league? And I think this insular idea of, we can squeeze these people for as much as we possibly can because they've got it, and keeping everyone else out, and how that trickles down into hockey culture, which, as anyone who's been part of it will know, it's very monocultural in a lot of ways, very unwilling to examine their own mistakes and issues and oversights. I think you can tell a lot about how hockey culture is, that the idea of denigrating Zach Hyman's 50 goals is this huge deal where a lot of big names in media got very upset when denigrating player accomplishments happens all the time in the media. All the time you hear on, like, people on TV talking about, yo, Austin Matthews, he could score 70 this year. But if the Leafs go out in the first round, in seven games again, how are people going to talk about him in the media, right? Just can't get it done, you know? So are we denigrating the accomplishment then? Or is it now no longer an issue because it's about something else? So I think if we're, and I know I'm jumping around here a lot, but if we're willing to do that in other situations, why can't we also be honest in writing profiles about players and talking about the issues going on in hockey? And maybe Zach Hyman was a bad example for other circumstances, but for me, when I was making the video, it felt like a perfect example because you've got the details already reported on, and then you've got people who are just not talking about it at all. So it's a very easy layout of a story for Zach Hyman's career as a youngster. And then you look at what that accomplished now once he was able to actually get in and assert himself in the NHL and become an absolutely dominant player. And my point is, we don't know how many people around Canada could have been there and weren't able to solely due to finances and connections.
Yeah, I mean, I think going back to your point about the story and the stories that we tell or we choose to tell, or the stories that we choose to edit or information we choose to omit, your example, the Stewart brothers, is a great one. The reason why that story is interesting is because whether it's Stewart brothers or Wayne Simmonds or the Subban brothers, being able to come from where they started to becoming a high-level NHL player is very rare. The odds are stacked against you. I don't think, and based on the many things that you've just said, it is not rare to be wealthy and be an NHLer. The vast majority of players playing in the NHL are upper middle class to wealthy by any definition, no matter what country they come from. So the fact that Zach Hyman happens to be wealthy is not all that interesting or unique to continue to talk about. So to me, and just from a storytelling aspect, if I'm thinking of search engine optimization and selling a story and what new information am I bringing to the table in, you know, essentially a decade of this person being a high-profile NHLer, I don't know the fact that, like, his parents made good financial decisions before he was born is all that interesting, because the vast majority of players he's played against in the NHL, it somewhat degrees to it, but that's the exact same circumstance.
Right, but I think that's kind of my point, right? Is that when we're at a point where we can say that about almost every NHLer, that to me should be ringing alarm bells. And for whatever reason, it isn't. And I think one of the reasons why is because we assume everyone knows. But a lot of people that reached out to me did not know, or were happy that the story was being told at least, or that it was being highlighted. So I think anytime we just assume, well, this is known and this is normal, I think we're already missing the point, if you understand what I mean. Like, those stories of the kids who make the NHL against all odds, that it was like either a parent that wouldn't give up or a coach that saw something special and pushed them further, or a community rallying around them, those are becoming more and more rare. And I think there's an assumption that the NHL was always like this, that it was always a wealthy person's league. And that's just not the case. That's why you see, like, the QMJHL, right? And we talk a lot in Quebec about how few Quebec-born players there are in the league, especially Quebec-born stars. I mean, a big part of that is just cost of entry. You know, Quebec is not a very wealthy province, especially in terms of, like, individual wealth. And you look at registration issues, like, we're just losing out on a ton of extremely talented individuals because we're valuing getting the most money versus access to the sport. And Yeah, I just think it's a big issue, and I think any time that we're saying, like, well, is this interesting? Is this going to be, like, it working in search engine optimization? I mean, is Zach Hyman being a hard worker news? We've watched him in the NHL for a long time. I think we already knew that. So is that that compelling of a story? I think these kinds of stories are going to get clicked because of the player accomplishment anyway. So if I'm an editor, I'm looking at somebody's work. I'm saying, tell the whole story, tell the best story that you can, write it up, make it great. And don't worry about search engine optimization. I feel like chasing those kinds of things, I understand it's important, but if you're a big media organization or media company, I don't think in this kind of story, that's where you have to, you know what I mean? Like, you're going to get the attention just by talking about the player and their accomplishment. You don't need to limit the story because you might not find it to be new information.
No, I think the newsworthy aspect of it is someone who was deemed at best a role player got to the point where he scored 50 goals, right? And I think that's generally what the newsworthy aspect of it. But I don't want to go around in circles on that aspect of it. You mentioned, you know, these are the stories we should be telling. These are the stories that institutions should be telling, and in the way that we should be telling them. You are a storyteller. You work with multiple media entities. You have a sphere of influence, whether it's your platforms or just other people in the industry that you work with that potentially look up to you. In what ways have you tried to impact the type of storytelling that you're saying we're void of?
Well, I think I write in a different way. I'm not someone who writes big profiles. I'm more of an analyst. So I think when I write about something, my biggest driver is, like, what can I tell people that they might not find out on their own? And that is, like, why a certain player is struggling or why a certain player is excelling, why a player is excelling that might not last, those kinds of things. But overall, I think the most important thing is you just try to tell as much of a story as you can, tell as much of the truth as you can that you're capable of. And when you miss something, be humble in accepting that maybe you missed it, or at least be willing to admit fault and go back and correct, which I'm always willing to do. I've been wrong before. I think everybody is wrong sometimes. That's how life works. And when I'm consuming media, if there's people who have a lot of influence that are completely unwilling to see a different perspective or see that they may have missed something or got something wrong, I no longer really trust them. Like, one example that I would say in terms of how I operate is always admit what you don't know out front. Like, I get a lot of people, especially Canadian fans, asking me, like, prospect questions. I don't watch enough junior or college or European hockey to know enough about prospects. So I can say, listen, this is what I've heard from people that I trust in this area, but don't think about my opinions on prospects because it's just not worth much. And I think that we would be better as a whole media community if we acted that way about everything.
So would you grant that you can understand why people may say, well, listen, you have a platform, you are, you know, preaching and being holier than thou on the way this and other stories should be covered. Why aren't you doing the work that you are espousing others need to be doing?
Well, I mean, I would ask, what kind of work would you like me to do? Because first of all, what I'm talking about isn't something that I do on a regularly, at least haven't in a long time. And the other thing is, as much as I may have my small sphere of influence, I am not a big player in media. Right now I'm in the middle of starting something up, out of nothing. And I've been in that situation several times. I have worked very hard to get where I am, but I've had lots of leg ups too, and still with those. you know, this media environment is not great for making a living. So if people have suggestions for me, I'm all ears for that. I would like to start the conversation and continue the conversation on this as much as possible to try to get some changes going. But at the same time, I think in order to actually make meaningful change here, power players, both in media and hockey at writ large, are going to have to come to the table and admit that the current trajectory is not sustainable and the way that we cover certain aspects of the game is poor. I mean, one thing that really shocked me in terms of how this video went down, because as I said, I mixed player analysis with a media critique in that first video, and it didn't work. It came across as a personal attack on Zach Hyman, which it wasn't. And the total unification of hockey power players within a couple of hours to attack that, when some of those same people who were so willing to come to the defense, the supposed defense of Zach Hyman, who I was, you know, supposedly personally attacking, they are so silent on things like Hockey Canada's 2018 sexual assault investigations. You know, so when we're willing, like, everybody is willing to dunk on someone on social media, but at the same time, so few are willing to look at this and say, like, what is the intended conversation starter here? What are we trying to talk about? And actually tackling those tough issues. And I think when there's a media environment that's more concerned about getting your hit in as opposed to actually talking about this stuff, it's not good. It's really bad. And the further time goes on, and I look back at the interactions, I haven't seen all of them because I'm not crazy. I think that tweet got something like 7 million impressions. They're not good. You know, it's not a good look. I can admit my faults when I make a mistake, but a lot of people who are very powerful in media made comments about that look extremely unprofessional and frankly shameful, that they aren't even willing to engage with the topic. It's, first of all, distract because we're talking about Zach Hyman instead of the actual issue, which I admit is partially my fault, but nobody in media is dumb, right? We know what the point is in a 4-minute video. And I think you can watch it a couple of times and you'll probably get what I'm trying to say, even if you disagree. But there were a lot of full-on fake quotes, for example, from Howard Berger, for one, had fake quotes put out there saying things that I didn't say. And other big players in, like, the PHWA that were willing to take things and frame it in a way that I think they know is not what I was trying to say.
As I leave and I wrap, I want to give the last word to you without cross-examine. In terms of, we saw where this conversation started, where it got somewhat contentious, I think it's fair to say. What would you like to leave people in terms of your viewpoint on where it should go?
Yeah, okay, so where it should go, I think we just need to continue talking about accessibility. I think that if anybody wants to understand how rough it can be, listen to people who deal with disabilities, because they are on the forefront of accessibility at all times in their life. So I think that's where the conversation needs to go. And just one other thing that I wanted to touch, which, if it's okay with you, Donovan, just the idea of anti-Semitism being a part of this.
Sure.
Yeah. So I just wanted to talk about that quickly, because there's nothing really you can say when you are leveled a criticism like that in terms of, like, oh, well, I'm not like that, without being the guy who protests too much. So I just want to talk about how I view that whole situation. And I think anti-Semitism is incredibly dumb. The idea that you could hate a people as a whole, you know, anybody who buys into that ideology, to me, that conspiracy theory is at the same level as, like, flat earthers, where these are just not serious people. Not that they can't do serious harm. They do all the time. Anti-Semitism is on the rise. We know that. You know, we all remember the videos coming out of Charlottesville a few years ago. So it's before the current conflict, too. But frankly, anybody who thinks that they're going to be getting support from me on the whole anti-Semitism thing, you're barking up the wrong tree. That is not something that I support in any possible way. I think if you hate anybody for the color of their skin, their culture, their religion, their gender identity, their sexuality, you are very foolish. And I think those things can only come from ignorance. So I would encourage anyone who feels that some other is the cause of your problems, I would encourage you to talk to some people in that community, start to understand them, and educate yourself. Because blaming everything on the other is a classic tactic throughout human history to try to get people to do a certain thing, and buying into it doesn't help you. Even the worst, most rabid anti-Semite, you're not being helped by having that opinion or those beliefs. It makes you look terrible, and it's not going to help your life. You're going to be miserable in the end.
Just to footnote for the audience, what you're, not to speak for you, but what you're referring to is some people latched on to your conversation and critique of Hyman and espoused their own anti-Semitic views to it because Hyman is Jewish, attended United Synagogue Day School, a Jewish high school in the Toronto area. And so, again, I don't want to speak for you, but you are making a statement that you are denouncing any of those messages and distancing yourself from that viewpoint.
Anybody who supports anti-Semitism, absolutely, I want nothing to do with you. And I haven't seen anybody in my mentions, but I also have the quality filter on Twitter, so I hope that none of those sneak through, but you will not find a supporter in me in pushing anti-Semitic rhetoric. I understand why certain people in those communities made that connection, because just the optics of talking about somebody coming from wealth and like having their destiny kind of pushed in that way sets off certain alarm bells, especially for people in the Jewish community, because it sounds very tropey. That was not my intention. It was just trying to go over the facts, and Zach Hyman happened to be the guy that I read the coverage about. It could have been anybody else, and I happened to know his story. That's really all it was. And nobody is obliged to believe me here. I just want to say that kind of opinion where you hate somebody for who they are is disgusting, and I don't like you if you feel that way.
I appreciate you being open to have the conversation. The good news is, I think, if I did my job correctly, and I hope I did, people have a better viewpoint in where you were coming from in the conversation you were hoping to have.
I hope so.
Yeah, the bad news, and I only speak for me personally, is I still don't think it's a great comp or example. I don't find that aspect of his story to be interesting, but there are different flavors of ice cream for a reason. And there are different members of the media for a reason, as we all bring our own personal sensibilities and perspectives into our storytelling. We'll continue to watch the stories that you tell and continue to engage in the ones that incite debate like this one. So thank you for spending the time.
Thank you, Donovan. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much to Andrew for spending the time. Hopefully you found that conversation somewhat enlightening, and it's tough to fully understand someone's point of view when you're limited to the amount of characters you can use to express something, or in the case of the two videos that he posted, you may not have the capacity to sit on your phone and watch what he is saying in full, but we give you the chance via this podcast to do that. I try to allow him space to say his viewpoint, but also give some rebuttal in ways that I think you as a listener might have been thinking this point should be challenged. Frankly, that's how good journalism should work. We endeavor to do that, as does Andrew. You can give him a follow on X. At Andrew Berkshire is his handle. There you can find a link tree to all of his work, including, as I mentioned, the Game Over podcast, which you can subscribe to wherever you listen to your podcast. You should be already subscribed to this podcast, the Going Deep podcast. If you haven't, like, favorite, share, and subscribe. But even more important than that, if you enjoy it, tell a friend. The real currency for us in the podcast business is you spreading the word, helping us with some discoverability, because essentially we do this for you. So thank you for listening. Talk to you soon.